Well, good morning, you old Marvelites. And you people in live stream land, don't think I can't see you. This is a two-way camera we have here, so I can see you, and I know if you've fallen back to sleep. Today, this lovely day in May, it's Mother's Day. It's not a liturgical holiday, it's not a church holiday, but it certainly is an important civic holiday. So today we're going to take a look at some mothers in the Bible. Of course, we think of Mary first, and she's certainly there, and we'll take a look at her. But we've talked quite a bit about Mary, and we will talk about her again, but I want to talk about some other ones. Here's some famous mothers. In the first book of Kings, chapter 3, verses 16 to 28, famous scary mothers. Well, there are some of them, aren't there? This is during the reign of Solomon. That might give you a hint. 1 Kings 3, verses 16 to 28. Now, Solomon, you know, is the son of David. David could not build the temple because he had blood on his hands. Specifically, you remember the blood of Uriah the Hittite, whose wife he stole and then arranged for Uriah to be murdered. So that was not good, and God did not forget that. So he did not have David build his temple, although he wanted to. But no, he could not do that. Solomon, his son, built the temple, and we have huge descriptions of it, which we're not going to read today. But sometime you must read it, because it gives us a sense of what it must have looked like. And it must have been amazing. God asks Solomon, what do you want me to give you? And Solomon says, I want wisdom. So we talk always about the wisdom of Solomon. And here is an example of the wisdom in action. It's verses 16 through 28. Who wants to read? It's 1 Kings, the first book of the Kings. And that book is right after Samuel. 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 16, and here comes...
She chose me.
She knows. You know, this is our millennial, pre-millennial.
You better hold it.
She reads from her iPhone, and she definitely comes from a generation before we had iPhones.
Yes.
So you live streamers think you're so smart. Look.
Then came there two women that were harlots unto the king and stood before him. And the one woman said, O my Lord, I and this woman dwell in one house, and I was delivered of a child with her in the house. And it came to pass the third day after that I was delivered, that this woman was delivered also. And we were together. There was no stranger with us in the house, save we two in the house. And this woman's child died in the night because she overlaid it. And she arose at midnight and took my son from beside me, while thine handmaid slept, and laid it in her bosom, and laid her dead child in my bosom. And when I rose in the morning to give my child suck, behold, it was dead. But when I had considered it in the morning, behold, it was not my son, which I did bear. And the other woman said, Nay, but the living is my son, and the dead is thy son. And this said, No, but the dead is thy son, and the living is my son. Thus they spake before the king. Then said the king, The one saith, This is my son that liveth, and thy son is the dead. And the other saith, Nay, but thy son is the dead, and my son is the living. And the king said, Bring me a sword. And they brought a sword before the king. And the king said, Divide the living child in two, and give half to the one and half to the other. Then spake the woman whose the living child was unto the king, for her bowels yearned upon her son. And she said, O my Lord, give her the living child, and in no wise slay it. But the other said, Let it be neither mine nor thine, but divide it. Then the king answered and said, Give her the living child, and in no wise slay it. She is the mother thereof. And all Israel heard of the judgment which the king had judged, and they feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to do judgment.
How about that? These two ladies have a child. They are arguing over him. And so Solomon, in order to show wisdom like that, you have to be willing to cut a baby in half. But I think Solomon was wise enough that he knew what was going to happen. And that is that the real mother wasn't going to let him do that. It seems a little odd to me even that the fake mother would. I think most of us faced with that would say, you know, never mind. But that's the wisdom of Solomon. Someone who, it's a story. You know, infant mortality was so widespread in those days. They had to have large families because they knew that most of them would not live to be five. A lot of them did not live to be one. So the death of children was common and universal. And here is here's a story about a mother's love and care. Here's another one. 2 Kings, the next book of the Kings, chapter 4. 2 Kings, chapter 4, verses 8 through 37. Now we are working with Elisha, one of the prophets. He was a disciple of Elijah. And now Elijah has gone up to heaven, remember, in a chariot of fire. And Elisha is now the prophet we admire. And one day he's on a journey, and it's chapter 4, verses 19 to 26.
And he said unto his father, "My head, my head." And he said to a lad, "Carry him to his."
I'm sorry, I gave you the wrong. It's,
yeah, I think so, right?
It's verse
eight.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Verse 8 through 26. So let's back up and do it again. Pardon me, you live streamers.
And it fell on a day that Elisha passed to Shunem, and there where was a great woman, and she constrained him to eat bread. And so it was that as oft as he passed by, he turned in thither to eat bread. And she said unto her husband, "Behold now, I perceive that this is an holy man of God, which passeth by us continually. Let us make a little chamber, I pray thee, on the wall, and let us set for him there a bed and a table and a stool and a candlestick."
I'm going to interrupt that. So Elisha comes by a lot, and they see him. Right. She offers him hospitality, and then she realizes that he's a holy man, and so they're going to make him, they want him to come by a lot, because you want a holy man to come by a lot, and so she does. Keep going.
Now where did I leave off? The cat. Oh. What verse, please?
You were on 11. Going to be 11.
And
yeah.
It fell on a day that he came thither, and he turned into the chamber and lay there. And he said to Gehazi, his servant, "Call this Shunammite." And when he had called her, she stood before him. And he said unto him, "Say now unto her, Behold, thou hast been careful for us with all this care. What is it to be done for thee? Wouldst thou be spoken for to the king or to the captain of the host?" And she answered, "I dwell among mine own people." And he said, "What then is it to be done for her?" And Gehazi answered, "Verily, she hath no child, and her husband is old." And he said, "Call her." And when he had called her, she stood in the door. And he said, "About this season, according to the time of life, thou shalt embrace a son." And she said, "Nay, my lord, thou man of God, do not lie unto thine handmaid." And the woman conceived and bare a son at that season that Elisha had said unto her.
Okay, now we're going to stop you. We're going to stop you again. So this sounds familiar. He tells her she's going to become a mother. Who else do you remember having that?
Mother Mary.
Again?
Sarah,
of Abraham. She also says, "Oh, come on, we're so old, we're not going to have children," but they do. And here the Shunammite woman is like that too. And she says, "No, that can't happen." So a miracle-working person has told her that God is going to do something for her, and does. It goes on here. Listen, when the child was older, he went out one day to his father among the reapers. He complained to his father, "Oh, my head, my head!" His father said to his servant, "Carry him to his mother." He carried him and brought him to his mother. The child sat on her lap until noon, and then he died. A cerebral hemorrhage he must have had at a very young age. And that vision of him sitting on her lap until he died. What's our most famous Michelangelo's, the Pietà of Michelangelo, in which Jesus is lying on his mother's lap as a grown man? Imagine how often that must have happened when a child sickened and there was really nothing to do in those days. Even today, sometimes there is nothing to do, but in those days, there was very little you were going to do, but she held him until he died. And he died in her arms. So she called to her husband and said, "Send me one of the servants and one of the donkeys that I may quickly go to the man of God and come back again." And he said, "Why go to him today? It is neither new moon nor Sabbath." He's thinking that she wants to observe an ordinary feast. And he's thinking, why would you want to do this now when your son has died? And she said, "It will be all right." So she saddled the donkey and said to her servant, "Urge the animal on. Do not hold back from me unless I tell you." So she set out and came to the man of God at Mount Carmel. When the man of God, that's Elisha, saw her coming, he said to Gehazi, his servant, "Look, there is the Shunammite woman. Run at once and meet her and say to her, 'Are you all right? Is your husband all right? Is the child all right?'" She answered, "It is all right." That's something to say when your child has just died. When she came to the man of God at the mountain, she caught hold of his feet. Gehazi approached to push her away, but the man of God said, "Let her alone, for she is in bitter distress, and the Lord has hidden it from me and has not told me." Then she said, "Did I ask my Lord for a son? Did I not say, 'Do not mislead me'?" He said to Gehazi, "Gird up your loins and take my staff in your hand and go. If you meet anyone, give no greeting, and if anyone greets you, do not answer, and lay my staff on the face of the child." Then the mother of the child said, "As the Lord lives and you yourself live, I will not leave without you." So Elisha wants to send his staff, which he knows will work, to raise this child from the dead. How he knows this, I don't know, but he does. And she says, "Nope, you're coming." This is kind of payback time. I gave you hospitality a lot, and it was my honor to have you in my house, and now it is my turn. Gehazi went on ahead and laid the staff on the face of the child, but it didn't work. There was no sign of life. He came back to meet him and told him the child is not awakened. When Elisha came into the house, he saw the child lying dead on his bed. So he went in, closed the door on the two of them, and prayed to the Lord. Then he got up on the bed and lay upon the child, putting his mouth on his mouth, his eyes upon his eyes, and his hands upon his hands. And while he lay bent over him, the child's flesh became warm. He got down, walked once to and fro in the room, and got up and bent over him. The child sneezed 7 times, and the child opened his eyes. Elisha summoned Gehazi and said, "Call the Shunammite woman." So he called her, and when she came to him, he said, "Take your son." She came and fell at his feet, bowing to the ground, and then she took her son and left. So there's something. There's a mother who is not afraid to play hardball with this prophet who gave her the thing she wanted most of all, and then seemingly God has taken it away. And she will not rest. She will not look to the right or the left. She will not pass go, and she will not collect $500. She is direct, and she's going to do what she came to do. And she rebukes him, and he listens to her. Sometimes we see in Scripture, and we see it in Jesus too, powerful people, powerful men, listening to a woman scold them. And here's an example of that. And not only listening, but doing what she says, and it works. So there's that. Now, all of you mothers, I know you love childbirth stories. Don't we all love to talk about how horrible it was for us, and my labor was longer than your labor, and my pain was greater than your pain? Well, here's one. It's Genesis 25, the 25th chapter of the book of Genesis, verses 19 to 26. Genesis 25, it's the birth of Jacob and Esau. Genesis 25, verses 19 to 26. Who wants to read? It's kind of funny, actually. Other people's childbirth stories are funnier than yours. Okay, who's here? All right, here we go.
These are the descendants of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham was the father of Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah, daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean of Padam Aram, sister of Laban, the Aramean.
Boy, you hit the jackpot on those names.
Oh, my goodness.
You got them all.
Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord granted his prayer, and his wife Rebekah conceived. The children struggled together within her, and she said, "If it is to be this way, why do I live?"
I remember that.
So she went to inquire of the Lord, and the Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples born of you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other, the elder shall serve the younger." When the time to give birth was at hand, there were twins in her womb. The first came out red, all his body like a hairy mantle, so they named him Esau. Afterward, his brother came out, with his hand gripping Esau's heel, so he was named Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them.
All right. So she has such a terrible time. She wonders why she's living. And there is that moment in giving birth when you think, you know what, this is not going to work. There are certain things that can't happen, and this is one of them. But then it does. Then it does. And there you are. So the birth of Jacob and Esau. Two nations are struggling in your womb. So Jacob and Esau, as you recall, they never do warm to each other, and they are rivals forever. And you remember that Jacob, very soon, later on in this chapter, steals Esau's birthright. Though he is the younger one, and therefore Esau has the right to inherit. One day he's hungry and doesn't have any food, and in exchange for some food, he says to Esau, "Oh, well, okay, you can have some food. Give me your birthright." And he does, so that's what happens. And Esau does not take it kindly, and has a hard time forgiving him, and Jacob is scared of Esau for the rest of his life. This prefigures the difficulties in the Holy Land that continue to this day. There are two nations in the Holy Land, and they continue to struggle. And this is old. This is older than Moses. Moses is the leader of the Hebrew people who have in Egypt long after this happens. But before there is a Hebrew people, before there is a nation, there are these patriarchs, and Abraham is the first one. He has a covenant with God. And those two factions are both children of Abraham. And we look at Muslims today we call them one of the Abrahamic faiths. The Abrahamic faiths are three: Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. And Islam claims its descendants also from Abraham. Yes, Q.
And today, the Palestinians are holding the heel of the Jewish people.
Well, that's okay, and it continues to be a struggle. And here is a first incidence of that at birth. Another mother. This is one of those mothers of choice. You know, a lot of people talk, especially in New York, because you know a lot of people come to New York from live stream land. They come in person. And there's going to be an opportunity for us to do that. When is Live Stream Sunday?
It is in October, I think.
When is it?
October, I
think. In October, there's an invitation for all you people in Live Stream Land to come here and visit us. I mean, you see us on TV. Why don't you come and sit around here and have a good time with us? So you'll hear a lot more about that over the summer. But what was I saying before?
People come to New York.
Families of choice. People come to New York, and sometimes they come to New York to get away from wherever they were, and sometimes they don't go back, and a lot of them don't do that. And, of course, they leave families back home, wherever they are in live stream land, and some of their families, hi, Mom, are watching right now. So since they've left their families at home, when they get here, they create other families, families of choice. So, you don't have your relatives with you, but you sort of create relatives. They're your friends, but they are closer to you sometimes than the family that brought you up. And so I think it's pretty natural for people to want to create families wherever they go and create mothers. And here's a story about somebody who created a mother. It's the book of Ruth. The book of Ruth, chapter 1, verses 1 through 8. Somebody got it? You can start reading. Book of Ruth, chapter 1, verses 1 through 8. Ruth comes right after Judges, so it's early on. Q, we're eager to hear you. You ready to go?
In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. And a certain man of Bethlehem in Judah went to live in the country of Moab, he and his wife and two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, is that right?
Yes.
And the name of his wife, Naomi. And the names of the two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went into the country of Moab and remained there. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other, Ruth. When they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died. So that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you here, and that's a bad thing. A woman is in trouble if she does not have some male relative to take care of her, and Naomi has none. And she's in a strange land. She is in Moab. Her sons took Moabite wives, so there she is with these two Moabite daughters-in-law, and no paisans to help her out in this foreign country. Please continue.
Then she started to return with her daughters-in-law from the country of Moab. For she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had considered his people and given them food. So she set out from the place where she had been living, she and her two daughters-in-law, and they went on their way to go back to the land of Judah. But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find security, each of you in the house of your husband."
I'm going to interrupt you now. So here's what happened. The two girls are Moabites. The boys married Moabite ladies. So they are in Moab. They are already in their own country. They have relatives. So they would be okay. Their duty is to stay with their mother-in-law, but she's saying, "No, you don't have to do that. Please stay in your country where you will be safe and secure. You've been great to me, and I appreciate it, but you don't need to do any more for me than this. Please go on."
Then she kissed them, and they wept aloud. They said to her, "No, we will return with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Do I still have sons in my womb that they may become your husbands?"
That would take a while, right?
"Turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. Even if I thought there was hope for me, even if I should have a husband tonight and bear sons, would you then wait until they were grown? Would you then refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, it has been far more bitter for me than for you, because the hand of the Lord has turned against me." Then they wept aloud again. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. More?
Please.
So she said, See, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. But Ruth said, and this is her book, do not press me to leave you or to turn back from following you. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. There will I be buried. May the Lord do thus and so to me, and more as well, if even death parts me from you.
Okay, thank you. So that's very beautiful and so sweet. Entreat me not, and of course, nothing beats the King James in this. Entreat me not to leave thee, or to refrain from following after thee. Whither thou goest, I will go. Where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Now that is love. Even if it is not in my interest, even if it's better for me to stay, you know, where I am, I'm going to go with you. Now, of course, as life goes on, and they do indeed, Ruth and Naomi do go back to Judah, where Ruth has never been. There they meet a kinsman of Naomi's, Boaz, who is wealthy. And we've talked about this in this class before. Ruth has adventures. And her adventures land her in the genealogy of Jesus, which we have in Matthew. And well, all right, you go, Ruth. She had courage and she had love for her mother-in-law. So that was not her mother. But she sort of, as we do, you don't have a mother, you don't have a sister, you don't have a brother, you cast your lot in with someone who's going to be that for you. I'm wondering if any of you, anybody want to say anything about a family of choice that you've had here? You left home and, you know, don't live there anymore, but you live here. Who has a family of choice or had a person? Did somebody find a new mother or a new, here's somebody. Marble is your new mother.
No, it's my family of choice.
Yeah, this is the family of choice right here at Marble Church. Here's Marilyn's got it. Tell me it's about your family of choice.
Family here that I don't have there. In fact, people think when you come here, you're totally insane. You know, I fell in love immediately and came back three times here, and people don't want to live here at all. So, but I do have a family.
Family of choice. Anybody else got a family of choice?
Yes, I came here from graduate school, and it happened that almost everybody in my graduate school came here too. So we had
from somewhere else.
We all came to New York at the same time. We were all singers or actors.
Oh, and came to Marble.
And mm-hmm. No, I'm not talking about Marble. I came into New York. We all came to New York, and mm-hmm. so we had a ready-made family. It was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That continues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Continues to this day.
Yes.
All right.
Well, those of us that are still alive.
The rest are with Jesus, and they're fine. Anybody else have a family of choice? Here's somebody.
This isn't my situation, but it's very a common product of the LGBTQ community to have families of choice because their families have gotten rid of them, have pushed them away, and they have their families of choice. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of friends who don't have parents who want or family to run with them, and so they've chosen places like Marble or other people to be their families.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That was very true. During the height of the AIDS epidemic, all of us who were around on that day had the just shocking experience of knowing somebody whose own mother would not visit. And that's, how do you do that? I don't know. But we knew people that whose families thought that AIDS was a judgment for their lifestyle, and no, never mind, you just go ahead and I don't know, but that did happen, and so the people that they loved here stepped into those places and became their family when their blood families failed them, and you might not have believed it if you hadn't seen it with your own eyes that happened, and it happened more than once. It happened a lot. Didn't always happen. I mean, you know, many people's blood families did step up beautifully, but some didn't. And that was sure hard for those of us watching to understand. I do not understand it. And so other people, and you know the other thing that happened during that time? Often people's exes, people's former partners, stepped up to the plate and took care of the people that they were so mad at they could have just strangled them. But when push came to shove and that person was dying and alone and needed them, they came back from, you know, and just took care of them. It was such a horrible time in so many ways, but it was a beautiful time. It reminds me, just while we're talking about it, that AIDS Walk New York is next Sunday, the 20th. And we've got a walker here, Joanne. You can email me if you want to here at Marble, bcrafton@marblechurch.org, and I will put you in touch with her so that you can sponsor her. We've got a walker, and our Jazz Vespers next Friday, the Friday of the AIDS Walk, is dedicated to AIDS Walk New York and to all the people who have worked and who have lived and who are living with HIV and living well, and those who died, and we remember them. And so that's going to be an important weekend, and you should come to Jazz Vespers. Why? Because it's going to be beautiful and because I'm preaching. And I promise not to preach for a long time. But the music is going to be gorgeous. And I wrote two new verses to a hymn, an old hymn, How Can I Keep From Singing? That one. Two new verses about that time, about the struggle that we had during the AIDS crisis. So those two new verses will debut at that service, and you should come. I'm afraid it won't be live streamed, but, you know, if you get your plane reservations today, you can make it. You'll be all right. We'll be happy to see you. So the family of choice, Ruth made one, and a lot of us make them. Now we can get to Mary, and we've done Mary a lot. Remember in the Annunciation, we have Luke 1, verses 26 to 38. First chapter of the Gospel according to Luke. It's a famous time. It's a shock to Mary, just like all these births are shocks to the lady who's foretold. In the sixth month, the angel of Gabriel was sent by God to a town in Galilee called Nazareth to a virgin engaged to a man whose name was Joseph of the house of David. The virgin's name was Mary, and he said to her, "Greetings, favored one, the Lord is with you." She was much perplexed by his words and pondered what sort of greeting this might be. Well, she's about to find out. She doesn't know the half of it. The angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And now you will conceive in your womb and bear a son, and you will name him Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. And the Lord God will give to him the throne of his ancestor David. He will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end." Mary said to the angel, "How can this be? Since I am a virgin." And the angel said to her, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. Therefore, the child to be born will be holy and will be called the Son of God." Famous, famous announcement to Mary of the birth of her son. We don't have a lot of information about Jesus' childhood at all. But there are a few. And we've talked about all of them here. Next one, how about Luke 2, verse 41. Luke 2, verse 41. Who will read? Luke chapter 2, verse 41. Here comes King James.
"Now, his parents were to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem after the custom of the feast. And when they had fulfilled the days as they returned, the child Jesus tarried behind in Jerusalem. And Joseph and his mother knew not of it. But they, supposing him to have been in the company, went a day's journey, and they sought him among kinsfolk an acquaintance. And when they found him not, they turned back again to Jerusalem, seeking him. And it came to pass that after 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking them questions. Should we go on?
Go on, sure.
And all that heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. And when they saw him, they were amazed. And his mother said unto him, Son, why hast thou thus dealt with us? Behold, thy father and I have sought thee sorrowing. And he said unto them, How is it that ye sought me? Wist ye not that I must be about my father's business? And they understood not the saying which he spake unto them. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was a subject unto them. But his mother kept all these sayings in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man.
All right. And notice that last, it says that he went down with them to Nazareth and was obedient to them after that. Yes. Here's a comment. We're going to get you on the mic.
Is there any information about why Mary was the one picked to have baby Jesus? Is it because she was a virgin? Were there other criteria?
Well, you know, there's a lot of controversy about that because the word virgin, which we understand to mean someone who has not had sexual relations, that word is a little more nuanced in Greek, and it can mean just young woman. So the whole edifice of teaching that has really emphasized the virginity of Mary is a choice, and it's a choice the church made. One of the reasons that it might have made it was that the theology of the church became controlled by people who were in monastic orders, celibate people who were not married. And the church came to depend on people who did not, they wanted, and they again soon legislated that the priests and bishops of the church would be celibate. And, you know, Roman Catholic priests and bishops are celibate to this day. And we certainly know that there was a horror of human sexuality that grew up, you know, in Christian teaching and in a shameful way. When we look back at it now, we think, you know, what were they thinking? But the other thing was, if you have celibate people in charge, there will be no inheritance issues. So when you become a priest or a bishop or something, the church is going to own all you have. That could be attractive for the church. The church did become very rich, and that was one way. It did. So the preference for virginity and celibacy, and we're going to be talking more about this in a little while when we talk about weddings, that bias toward virginity certainly arose out of an unhealthy, neurotic horror of human sexuality, but also arose out of a not very admirable but understandable greed, a desire to, why don't we let the church inherit this stuff and not somebody's son. And the way to have no sons is to be celibate. So there that is. Our history is our history, and it isn't all admirable, but it is all ours. John 2, the marriage at Cana. We've talked about this before. The marriage at Cana appears only in John. It's the second chapter, verses 1 through 12. How many days, by the way, were they looking for Jesus in Jerusalem? Three. So how many days was he in the tomb? Three. Three is very important. So Mary and Joseph do not know where he is, and after 3 days, there he is revealed. This would seem important to the people who were hearing this for the first time, and they would think it was most elegant that it was 3 days. It would seem very symbolic to them. Let's take a look at John 2, verses 1 through 12. Who wants to read? Here, somebody.
On the third day, there was a marriage at Cana in Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus also was invited to the marriage with his disciples. When the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "O woman, what have you to do with me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Now 6 stone jars were standing there for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. Jesus said to them, "Fill the jars with water." And they filled them up to the brim. He said to them, "Now draw some out and take it to the steward of the feast." So they took it.
Okay, I'll stop you here because we know what happens next. Turns out the wine was better than the wine they had before. And so he saves the wedding reception. It's interesting. He kind of sasses his mother a lot. And he does it here. What concern is that to you and me? My hours are not come. But she now, she knows a little bit more about what he can do. So she says, do whatever he tells you. It's going to be fine. And it is. Well, you know what? We're getting to it's time for our song. Remember that our Tuesday lunch Bible thing is now on Thursdays. It's Bread and Bible, and it's at noon on Thursdays instead of Tuesdays. And here's the corniest song there ever was for Mother's Day. You all know it, some of you. M is for the million things she gave me. O means only that she's growing old. T is for the tears she shed to save me. H is for her heart of purest gold. E is for her eyes with love light shining. R is right, and right she'll always be. Put them all together, they say, Mother, the world that means the world to me. Okay, y'all. See you next time.